You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 19th of July 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com because it's Friday night and we have with us tonight the producer of Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, producer extraordinaire Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, good evening to you, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir, and a good job I was around.
Yeah. Yes, it certainly was. I was deep in conversation there. I'd completely forgotten the time, and thank heavens you messaged me in about 8 minutes to. And thank God we did all the preparation earlier today, didn't we?
We certainly did,
1 o'clock. Yeah. A lot of preparations. So we got that. Lucky we got that out of the way early on this morning, really. Yeah. So you tell me, Dennis, you're almost there with episode 20, is that right?
I'm on an ant's left tour, just off completing it now. It's practically in the bag. It's probably one of the longest parts, longest time on one of the parts that I've ever spent, because things just weren't happening. But over the last couple of weeks, I'm sure you've noticed in our conversations, things have started to happen. They're explaining certain things, what I'd half discovered. And so now I'm really pleased.
Excellent, excellent. So what was that you said there? A gnat's left toe or a midge's willy away from finishing it?
Yeah, so it's near as completion as can be.
Almost done. Well, it's done enough for us to actually have some of the text from it, which we're going to get into tonight, which I must say does look like a very interesting subject matter that we've got here, and it's
can I just say before you start, the opening section of part 20, when I took a long hard look at it, and if you remember at the end of Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, there's a quote from General Franco, and in that quote is a sentence saying that Adolf Hitler, son of the Catholic Church. I thought long and hard about this, and I even went into more research about it. And what it was at the time is that Spain had a strict state press and media, and nothing went out without Franco knowing. So when people, as I've read on the internet, say that, oh, Franco never said it, this was just put out over the media, I think it was in a paper called Reform, that it didn't count for nothing. Franco, nothing went out without Franco knowing. This is why it's state-controlled. So when a man of his stature comes out and says that Adolf Hitler died defending Christianity, the son of the Catholic Church, nobody takes any notice. And I can't understand why, because he's not going to gain anything. In fact, he'll make more enemies than anything at the end of the war. But the fact is, he wouldn't lie. And I just want to just assert that, because the rest of the part develops, and as it has done all the way through, really, about the great lie that Hitler was not a Christian.
So we can take that as being the truth, because that was put out by the state. That wasn't the media. That was put out by the state. That was okayed by Franco. It was an official statement. And what was the statement exactly? What was it saying, Dennis?
Well, I haven't got the whole statement in front of me, but what it actually said, the piece which was most decisive was that Adolf Hitler, the son of the Catholic Church, died defending Christianity.
Died defending Christianity.
So it doesn't get any plainer than that.
No, it's not just saying that he was a Catholic, but the point of the war was to defend Christianity. So that's pretty big, isn't it, to be hushed up? And
it is for a lot of Christians not to either believe it or ignore it, because they better wake up and smell the roses.
And have the rest of the world trying to make out that he was a pagan and he was trying to get rid of the church. And there you have it. He was fighting on the side of Christianity. And in this episode, then, looking at the text that we've got here, looking at the script that we've got here, it sort of goes back to 1924 and goes up to about 1933. Is that correct? It's just looking at this early part of National Socialism?
Yeah, he's run his up to his grab the power.
We're getting a little bit of distortion here, Dennis. Is your USB lead plugged in nice and solid and tight?
Well, it was last I looked. It seems to be.
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of crackling there. Maybe that will have improved it. Maybe that will have improved it. We'll just have to see. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good. Oh, right. Well, it's subtitled Implementing the Doors Plan. And that's something that you've mentioned already, I think, possibly last week that came up mm-hmm. in a conversation. And you begin with, it's 1924 and the Social Democrats and the Centre Party, along with the Communists, are celebrating as the leader of the National Socialist Party, Adolf Hitler, is sent to prison. And this is it's the sort of time that I don't really know that much about myself. I think most of us are aware of why he was sent to prison, maybe not. So do you want to get into that, Dennis? Why was it that Hitler was actually sent to prison in 1924? Was it for hate speech?
Or, No. It was an uprising. He tried to snatch power, revolution.
Tell us about how that happened. Tell us how that happened.
Well, I mean, if you can remember, in The Greatest Story Ever Told, and there's a picture depicting this where Hitler is right at the front in a white coat, where they're marching towards the government house, and he'd made arrangements with a couple of other people involved in this who didn't follow through. And so consequently, when they turned the corner and got to the point where the government house was there, the troops were there in open fire. And Hitler was right on the front row. Again, for these people who say we're a communist or we're a shill, you know, it wasn't the best place for a communist or a shill to be. It was trying to be a national socialist on the front row. So, it was charged with treason, which carried the death sentence.
And this was the beer hall push, wasn't it?
That's the one.
I think I may have seen the picture. I mean, it may have been from movies. I think I can recall in my mind seeing a picture with him at the front there with their arms mm-hmm. sort of interlocked.
Linked, yeah, white raincoat.
Yeah, and they're walking along. So that's an actual picture of the time, is it? That's not from a movie or anything?
Yeah, well, there is one, and they used it in the film, obviously.
Right. That's where I've seen it. So the death sentence is what was usual for treason. So it was just commuted to 2 years for Hitler. So why was that, do you know?
Well, actually, the defending lawyer for Hitler wanted probation. So that's a bit more stricter in an actual prison sentence, because he'd accounted for himself well in court. One of his speeches there, like, even the judges drew in a set of panel of judges. And by the end of – and, well, put it this way, you just don't give Adolf Hitler one of the greatest speakers like the world's ever known, you know, a platform in a court to defend his case, because he's going to do what he does. And so consequently, like, you know, they decided, you know, he didn't merit the death sentence, but they would give him a sentence, and he got about a year or something like that.
Well, he must have been able to convince them that, you know, that he did this out of love for his country, and he was trying to do the right thing. And I think that this beer hall push, I think it had a lot of support from higher-ups as well, even though it failed.
Can you hear some children there, Sam?
I can. I was wondering if you got the window open or whether they're just, you know, out there enjoying themselves, making a lot more noise than usual. Are you there, Dennis? Have you gone to tell the children off?
Okay, I'm back now.
Okay, what was it, the window? You're just closing the window?
I just got gone and shot them.
Took a few pot shots at
you know,
them.
These Nazis, we don't take no nonsense.
Can't spoil their fun on a summer evening, Dennis.
Sure. Yeah. I think what was handicapped anyway.
Okay, so
we're a joke, I know.
Well, if they weren't handicapped before, they are now. Anyway, yeah,
definitely.
Where did we get to here? Yeah, I was saying that I think he had
treason,
a lot of the.
Yeah.
I think he had a lot of the top brass that were actually supporting in this, didn't he? Didn't he have some generals? And, you know, it wasn't like it was a load of working class people trying to smash the state. It was upper class people, aristocracy, generals, all yeah. sorts that wanted to try and fix the problems that the country had. And they thought this was possibly going to be the way to do it. Well, and they thought they'd have support.
The other country with communism. So they probably thought this is the best and quickest way we pull this off.
For yeah. And he was counting on getting a lot of support from the people once they started, wasn't he? Which
and I think he would have got it, yeah.
Yeah, eventually, but they mowed them down. As you say, Hitler was in the front. He obviously, he lost good friends of his.
25 died, I think.
I think their names are mentioned in Mein Kampf, aren't they? I think.
Well, they have a ceremony every year, you know, a big march through and lighting candles and dedicated to him. He always did. And he had the blood flag, if you remember, in the
Gerstein
Never Told, where he would anoint other flags with the blood of these marchers on this particular flag.
So it was a very important event
on
the formation of the party. Obviously, they literally had their brothers, their comrades around them dying for their country, trying to get the National Socialist Party to succeed. So I should imagine that the ones that were left alive, they were all the more determined to see this through, because if they didn't, then they'd be letting down the people that had just given their lives for it. So I imagine.
Well,
I would
imagine the ones that gave the lives would have been the best of the best anyway. They were right there at the front, so it would have been a big blow. I would imagine.
Definitely. So, and once Hitler was actually in the prison, I mean, this is a fairly famous thing of what happened while he was in there. So, what happened while Hitler was in the prison?
Well, obviously, when the cat's away, the mouse will play. And, you know, the SDP, Hitler always regarded as communist in disguise. And even today, Merkel's a leader of the SDP, and she has no love for her country, as has been proven. But while he was in prison, obviously, he's locked up. He can't really give any public speakings. So he tries to get in touch with the people outside to try and convince the people not to accept this Dawes plan, which he said would be the ruin of Germany and was actually intended to be. I mean, you won't get that on Wikipedia, but trust me, he would prove him right.
So while he was inside, he was still able to communicate with the rest of the party, even though he was within the prison.
Well, he visited, hadn't he, I think. I think that was the thing.
And while he was in the prison, he also wrote Mein Kampf, didn't he?
Exactly, yeah. So he made use of that time anyway. To be honest, he couldn't really do much else, really, but other than as we've just spoke about, wrote a book and tried to keep contact with some of the guys outside.
You know, it's like the Lord moves in mysterious ways. Sometimes people are locked up, and then while they're locked up, they can do amazing things. You know, Hitler wrote Mein Kampf. Bill Fink translated the New Testament into Greek from the oldest texts. You can go back into the Bible with Joseph, who was locked up in the prison, and then he managed to tell what the dreams the Pharaoh was having, and he ended up saving the whole of Egypt from a famine. And buying back the lands for the Egyptian pharaoh that he'd lost to these Canaanite peoples around. So, you know, bad things can be turned into good things. And when Hitler was there in the prison, he used his time wisely, wrote Mein Kampf. And he wouldn't have been able to do that if he hadn't actually been put in prison, I don't think, because he wouldn't have had the time. He would have been bothered by other things. So, you know, it's almost like there's like a guiding hand there. Well, what were the NSDAP doing while he was in prison? So they were still active? Did they have like an acting head? Or what happened to them?
I think if the trial was in, say, February of 24, then the NSDAP were stripped of all their assets and bankrupt in November of 23, about 2 or 3 months before that trial. So they literally had nothing to keep them going with, and the leader's locked up. And for those people, some have said it, that he had an easy time in prison. I remember reading about him once. He said that when he was in prison, there was a prison guard that really gave him a hard time. And the fact is, when he became leader, he said to go back and chastise him, it would have just been ridiculous. But he said he did give him an hard time.
So the NSDAP, they were pretty much neutralized. Were they banned, or did they just take everything from them? Did they actually ban them, proscript them as an organization, say, you know, we can't have the NSDAP anymore, you're banned, or did they just take all the assets and lock the leaders up?
I think they may have banned them, but not indefinitely. And they certainly took all their assets and stripped everything from their offices. So that when Hitler came out eventually, it wasn't so much of a problem starting again. It's just that he's starting again from scratch.
Right. And then you say, from his cell, Hitler warned of the Dawes plan that the Social Democrats and the Centre Party were implementing. And it began the systematic plundering of Germany, which had begun with the Young Plan. So we've got two things there. We've got the Young Plan, we've then got the Dawes Plan that it grows into, and while there's no resistance to these parties, the Social Democrats and the Centre Party, they start implementing this. So let's start with the Young Plan. What was the Young Plan then?
Well, that was formulated in 1929, and really what that was it was taking loans to more or less battle the hyperinflation. It was nothing to do with the reparations. This was just, the actual finances of the government were that desperate that they were taking loans to keep afloat, to try and, try and stabilize the economy. But the Dawes plan was help to pay off the reparations. So they were battling on two fronts. And this again kills the myth of people who say that, by the time Hitler came to power, Germany was doing fine. No, Germany wasn't doing fine. Germany was on a collision course for certain things which our friends would like to do.
So the first lot, this Young Plan, that was just to try and slow down the inflation. It wasn't enough for any investment. And then the Dawes Plan, which came after that was just to pay the interest. None of it was to actually invest or get businesses going, get people employed. It was all supposed to just be to pay off what was already owed. And of course, on top of that was going to be the repayments for it with interest.
Well, interestingly enough, they actually kind of reduced the payments to try and help Germany pay them, because, it was a stupid thing to do. They couldn't afford it anyway, but they wanted to kill the country, obviously. But because this Weimar government was American-friendly and communist-friendly, then they're trying to help them out. And by 1922, it paid something like £2 billion in reparations, when the actual figure in 1914, which is, 7 years, 5 years previous, was set at 50 million.
That must have been through the inflation, I guess. I mean, they must have had this inflation. And added to that, and then everything must have inflated the debt as well, even though the Reichsmark was obviously inflating. Instead of just accepting that that's how much they're going to get paid in, they must have inflated the debt in line with that as well, and added interest, because it wasn't actually being paid. And of course, one of these complaints was from I forget which Jew it was, a famous Jewish banker. He was making this complaint that the money that was being sent over once Hitler was in power, it was being spent on propaganda for the National Socialists instead of being spent on this.
He wasn't a banker, he was a lawyer, but he was high up in the he'd just come back from the Jewish Congress meeting where he was leader of the American delegation. He'd come back to America, declared all the war on Germany, and then in that speech he goes on about the bankers. I can't understand why they're paying all this money to Germany. But obviously, he weren't in on it, because what that does is, like we spoke about last week, one day, the banks are going to call it in. And from what I can see and what I've researched, when they brought the Versailles Treaty in and just cut parts of Germany up and took, parts of the population, put them in Poland, they were hoping to de-Germanize them, turn them into Polish eventually. So you'd lose your culture. Well, this way, if Germany can't pay, then the banks go in and cut up Germany and sell it off. And as crazy as that sounds, with all this debt, and, the banks would have made a good case for it, it would have looked legitimate in the eyes of the world.
Like,
does that get?
Like repossessing a house or something, like,
yes,
like loaning people a loan that they can't possibly pay back and then moving in and taking the house.
Stripping. Yeah. I think they stripped it, cut it up, sold it off, sold a bit to Poland, sold a bit to wherever.
So Hitler was warning people that that's what this was, and he was warning them from within the prison that this is no good and you mustn't support this and this has to be stopped. And they were all ignoring him and saying, oh, no, this is what Germany needs. We have to pay back.
Even Ludendorff.
Yeah, and they were all supporting the Social Democrats and the Centre Party, they don't have the Centre Party today, do they? But they do have the Social Democrats, or is it
the Social Democrats? Are there? These communists in wolves in sheep's clothing, whatever.
And that's the party that Merkel leads, isn't it? CSD, CSU, CSU. Yeah.
There's a clip of dumping a German flag once into a dustbin at this EU meeting, and they all applauded.
Absolute treason. Well, you continue. He states that the plan will lead to increased poverty. As Hitler, that is, he states that the plan will lead to increased poverty and that far from stimulating production, the interest on the loans will instead cripple the economy. Bankruptcies and unemployment will increase, taxes will rise, wages and salaries will be reduced, and agriculture will be ruined by the forced auctions of farms. And all of that came true. And I thought if we have a look at the 25-point plan that the National Socialists had, because there are 4 points in that which I think are related to the result of this Dawes plan and this Young plan. Number 7 says, we demand that the state be charged first with providing the opportunity for a livelihood and a way of life for the citizens. If it is impossible to sustain the total population of the state, then the members of foreign nations are to be expelled from the Reich. So what that is saying is everybody has to have a job, and it's the state's business to find work for everyone so that they can earn enough money, basically.
Yeah, he's also saying Germany first.
Yeah, and Germany has to be put first. Because obviously there's no mention of the foreigners in what he was saying from within prison. But quite clearly, if you've got foreigners there, then they're going to be using up the resources and taking up the money that should be going there for the Germans. And then you got point 11, abolition of unearned incomes, which is unearned work and labor incomes, breaking of debt slavery, the breaking of interest slavery. So where he's saying from within the prison, the interest on the loans will cripple the economy. They make it a big point, or one of their points from the 25 points is we've got to break this idea of putting interest on loans. We have to get rid of that because it's crippling the economy. So this 25-point plan was putting in place all the things that needed to be done in order to solve the problems that have been caused by the Dawes plan and the Young plan. And number 16 here. We demand the creation of a healthy middle class and its conservation, immediate communalization of the great warehouses, and they're being leased at low cost to small firms. The utmost consideration of all small firms in contracts with the state, county or municipality. So it's saying that instead of doing these contracts with international firms, they need to be employing Germans. They need to be, and the utmost consideration needs to go to the small firms, the smallest ones, to get them back to work, so that they can pay their debts off, so that the wages will go up, the salaries will go up, and everyone can have an improved life. And again,
that's exactly what they were trying to do, kill the middle class, and Hitler saw it. And they wanted to wipe out the farmers as well. Farmers obviously provided the food. As soon as Hitler came in, he gave the right back for father to son, you know, with the farm. Whereas before, you know, in the Weimar, they didn't have that luxury anymore. So what the plan was once Germany got so bad and there was no work and possibly even no food around, then millions would leave the country and go search for jobs in neighbouring countries like France and all the other places, and leave Germany again, hopefully, you know, while it's broken up, you know, they're going to lose the Germanic side of the culture, lost forever. That was the overall plan. And people can dispute it, but when you're bringing out books like Germany Should Perish in America and all the press appraising it to higher heaven, then it doesn't take much of an argument.
Well, that's what I was looking for, this bit about the farms, because I know that what Hitler did, he made it so that they could buy the farms back and yep. made it illegal to sell the farms, especially to sell the farms on to foreigners, because what they were doing, they were conglomerating them all together so that there yep. would be like one huge farm would own all the land, and that one huge farm would be owned by a Jew, and he'd have basically people working for him instead of the farm being in the hands of the family.
Being passed on to a family, yeah.
Yeah, because you have people, you know, mainly on farms, you have families that have lived there for centuries that have always worked that land. They've got their own mm-hmm. own livestock that they've bred that's perfect for the soil and for the grass that they're feeding on. And you have this long tradition that was being done away with. So I thought that was a part of the 25 points, but it isn't. But it may be part of part 17, where they say, we demand a land reform suitable to our needs, provision of a law for the free expropriation of land for the purposes of public utility, abolition of taxes on land, and prevention of all speculation in land. And that's a really good point there at the end. Get rid of speculation in land, which you know, if they could get rid of speculation in house prices, it would stop the house prices going up. And obviously, well, the same thing was happening with land.
Yeah, I mean, the communists have never liked farmers. In the Ukraine, the farmers suffered, and I think they were called kulaks in Russia. A lot of them were put to death. So, they like all the land to themselves, all the food. They control all the food, and everyone's working like ants for them.
So they're saying here that we demand a land reform suitable to our needs. Mm. So and expropriation of it. So if this land, as he was saying while he was in prison, he was saying there would be forced auctions of farms. What it was saying there is, we demand free expropriation of that land back again, provision of a law. I don't know if that meant they took it back without paying for it, because as far as I'm aware, they did actually pay for everything that they took. They didn't want to be seen as thieves. These Jews that were asked to leave their office, they were all given pensions, and mm. people that had bought these farms up, they were paid the going rate. Yeah, they were paid the going rate to sell the farm back to the farmer, and obviously the government would help with it. So this all played a really big role actually Major. In the National Socialist ideology, doesn't it? When you think about it, you've got 4 points there from the 25-point plan that were relevant to the effects of this Dawes plan.
Yeah, and that tied in with why the bankers in all the charitable mood kept sending money for 2 years to the Weimar government when they couldn't possibly pay it back. And they were still sending it to Hitler in 1933. And Hitler had stated on many occasions he ain't paying no reparations. He weren't involved in any deal coming to the conclusion of the reparations. And now there was the National Socialist Party. So they felt that they were free of all that and could renegotiate, you know, for Germany to be a stronger place.
Well, that's like Trump pulling out of the Iran deal. Isn't it, in a way? I mean, he did have the right to do that, because it wasn't him that made that deal. It's like anything that gets done now with Brexit, another prime minister can come in and undo it. Mm. It's not usually what they do, but they can do it. Legally, they can do that. So
he also pulled Germany straight out of the League of Nations because he felt it were Jewish and communist, which it was.
And so they were still receiving the money then for 2 years. That must have been a big help as well, actually, receiving this money.
You can hear Untermeyer whinging.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They've invaded the US, they've invaded Britain with propaganda, and all this is the bankers are paying for it.
Well, you know, the conspiracy theorists, that's what they say, isn't it? Oh, these Jews, they were funding Hitler, yeah, but they didn't exactly, know they
yeah,
were.
Yeah.
They didn't know
that's
they were.
That's why when all this Dawes thing came into light, all fell into place.
Yeah. Well, on leaving prison in February 1925, the other parties start mocking Hitler for trying to rebuild the NSDAP from scratch. Yet he proved so successful at this that they had to ban him from public speaking For 2 years.
2 years.
So what happened during this time? How did the NSDAP cope with Hitler being banned from speaking?
Well, I can only speculate. I've got my own thoughts. The fact is that they were so well organized anyway, and we'll come to this a little bit later on around election time, that it put the house well in order. And so the people who were working in the party would have worked to try and cover the loss of Hitler speaking. But when you think financially, because Hitler did used to go and give speeches, you know, to huge crowds, and they would all willingly pay to hear him speak. You know, a little tour of 2 or 3 weeks, it could raise a lot of money. But my own feelings is, and we've talked about this before as well, because of the Reich Concordat happening so quickly after he came to power, there must have been talks previously, just had to be. And I think whatever struggles that he might have had, I think the Vatican would have helped at least financially.
I hadn't actually thought about him being paid for speaking before, you know. I sort of imagined him, you know, sort of speaking to people, trying to get them to join the party. I hadn't thought of people actually paying to hear
You tell me a politician can do that today.
Yeah. You try to get away from what they say today. I'm also thinking, I mean, at this time, you know, 1923, you got Hitler in prison for 2 years, whatever. He comes out in 1925, and they're trying to rebuild the NSDAP. And I think this may have been the time when it was the party membership was top heavy with people from the working class, and that's, I think, when you got the Strassers in there and this left wing faction. Because they were just trying to get as many people as they possibly could to join. And they had like ex-communists and some quite, you know, rough types, basically, that formed the SA. And that was all at around about this time. But of course, you know, they couldn't say, well, we don't want you. You're not good enough. That they had to get as many people as they could to rebuild this party, which they did succeed in doing. So did they have anybody else that was there ever anybody else that was speaking for the NSDAP when he was banned for that 2 years?
Speaking in speeches. Yeah. I think Goebbels would have done a bit, wouldn't he, I think? It's probably if he didn't. He were a good speaker himself. But nobody else really jumps out, you know, because to do that kind of thing, you've got to be natural. And, you know, I think Goebbels and Hitler were.
I think there was that young lad that got killed, and they made a film out of him, and he's got a song about him. And I think he did some. He did some speaking. I forget his name.
Yeah, you played at the end, don't you? Yeah.
Momentarily. So I think they did have other speakers, but obviously Hitler was the main one. And these other parties, they were mocking him for trying to rebuild it, but he soon had them laughing out of the other side of their faces. In 1927, Hitler's speaking ban is lifted. Hindenburg, who by now has sold out, strongly defends the Young Plan. But by 1931, the government is functioning only through emergency decrees. So Hindenburg, you say Hindenburg, who has by now sold out. So was Hindenburg originally a supporter of Hitler and then he changed, or what? What does that mean?
Well, he certainly was, to an extent, more of a supporter of Hitler than he was of the SDP. But at a certain time, he kind of kicked everything into touch and just sided with him. And so, you know, whatever they said, he went along with.
But at that time, he was supporting the Young Plan at that time.
Yeah.
And what are these emergency decrees? It was functioning only through emergency decrees. What does that mean?
Right. Well, it gets to a point that because everything is about to collapse, the only way they can get things done is to use the law. And so they'll force things through, which may not be to everybody's cup of tea, but, you know, now it's law, you've got to swallow it. So there's no democracy involved. It's whoever makes those decisions brings the law out, and whatever he's passing is passed.
So it was for everything, basically. I mean, what do they have had they reached an impasse? Where, like today, in the British government today, the Tory party have only got a majority because of the Northern Ireland party that they've got with them. And even then, they've only got a majority of two. So if they try to get anything passed, they've got this problem. So is that the sort of problem that they had? They had so many different people in government that they couldn't get a majority?
I think it was just that things were getting so bad that there would have been so many arguments. No, you don't want to be doing this. Yes, we are going to do that. But the only way they could do it is to bring a law in to do it.
Right, right. I think I get you there. It's the same thing really as almost the stage that we've got to in Britain at the moment, where nobody's got the authority to do anything. And this is why Hitler was saying you can't have these committees deciding everything, and democracy is a failure. You have to have one person that decides, one person that's responsible, one person that can be held responsible afterwards if things go wrong. Because if you've got a group decision, nobody can take the blame. You can't say, well, that was your fault. But in the same way, nobody can take the credit for it either. And if you've got a committee that's making decisions, you know, they're going to take forever, and nobody's actually going to make this decision. You know, in a way, that's why when you get married, you know, the woman promises to obey the husband, so that you've got one person that makes the decision, one person that makes the final decision, because otherwise you're just going to be arguing all the time. You have to have it accepted.
Well, when you get a group of people, if they're all in line, it's compromise. Nothing really gets done. It's just a compromise. Nobody's strong enough to say, no, this is right. This is what we're going to do. Groups just don't do that normally.
Well, this is, you know, this is one of the reasons why there's so many problems with coalitions, because a lot of the European governments now are made up of various coalitions of different parties, and they don't, you know, they're not capable of getting anything done. I mean, in some ways they say, oh, well, that's good, because like in Germany, you can say, well, the AfD, they've got, what, 10%? Of 10% of the government, so at least they can have a say. But you know, they haven't actually got enough power to really do anything. They can, you know, they can speak to people, they can get an income, but they're not really in a position to make the serious changes that are needed. And that's a problem that's inherent with democracy. I think one of the reasons that's why we have this different system in Britain, where you've got like the three main parties and the first past the post wins. And it always means that whoever's in there should have enough power. And he's only got one other party really to go against. But then when you get both the parties are exactly the same, and it's the two Hydra's heads on the same monster making the same, you know, all heading in the same direction, then it fails, because there's no difference between them. There's no real there's no difference between Labour and Conservative and Liberal Democrat as far as the diversity agenda is concerned. Every one of them is progressive. They're all progressive parties, and they won't allow anybody else in there. So, you know, in a way, when you do have these coalitions in these other countries, at least they may have a nationalist portion of the government that is in there, that is able to get government money, basically, and get information out to people. So maybe maybe that is a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a positive that there is there with it that we don't have here. Getting back to this, the Centre Party, which has put itself entirely at the disposal of the Social Democratic Party. So they've joined together. That's the same as in France, isn't it? When Marine Le Pen is looking like she's going to win the presidency, and all
that's
the other parties,
all gang up, don't they?
Yeah, they all gang up. So this is what was happening in Germany. The Centre Party put itself entirely at the disposal of the Social Democratic Party, and they began to mobilise the church as well against Adolf Hitler. Left-wing Centre Party priests and progressive bishops lead a fanatical battle against the National Socialist Movement, refusing the sacraments to its members and even denying some of them a Christian burial. So this, they say that they mobilised the church here, Dennis. Was that the whole church? Was there a resistance to it from the traditional faction in the church?
I mean, the Centre Party was the Catholic Party. And at that particular time, you know, the leaders were... They've been under 14 years of the Weimar. A lot of, I said at the time, you know, when he wrote the Hitler's Pope book, John Cornwell, and I said at the time it would have been infiltrated 14 years under the Weimar government. And so you've got left-wing priests and bishops, which is why Hitler, when he came in, warned everybody not to be, you know, that's not your job. You know, you do your job, you'll be all right. But they turned on him, yeah. And certainly this were news to me when I heard that they won't even bury him. I mean, how bad is that?
Yeah, I mean, once somebody's died, they're effectively saying we want to desecrate their bodies once they're dead and prevent them being put on hallowed ground.
Well, these weren't Christian. They couldn't have been. They couldn't have been Christian. No way.
You know, that's what I was thinking. I was saying similar the other day, you know, they can't be Christian behaving like that, but they call themselves Christian. And this centre party, so that was the Catholic Party, and it put itself entirely at the disposal of the Social Democratic Party. And the Social Democratic Party, I mean, that's basically the communists, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just a cover, really. I mean, you know, Hitler said we could see right through them, you know.
So what else were they doing besides refusing to give sacraments to the members and denying them a Christian burial? What else formed a part of this mobilisation against the National Socialists?
Well, I suppose they would have been aiming at stopping Catholics from joining. Because if you're a Catholic and you realise, if I become a National Socialist, I'm not going to get buried. Or I can't get communion, you know, on a Sunday. You know, the sacraments aren't allowed to me. That's going to stop a Catholic from joining, you would think. But it actually didn't. It actually still grew, amazingly enough.
Do you know what the Protestants were doing at the time? The Lutherans, were they joining in with this attack against the National Socialists?
Well, it's difficult to say, but I've always felt that the Protestants, Hitler wanted to eventually, you know, heal that rift, but he tried and he soon found out it was getting nowhere, and then he didn't think it was his job to do that anyway, so he let it be. So there would have been some resistance from the Protestants to the Catholic Church, and so when you know, the centre party is not burying these Catholic people, I don't think the Protestants were that too worried.
Yeah, he did make that a big part of the first few years when he was in office, was trying to get the two sides of the church to bury the hatchet and to get the Protestant churches to come together under one Reich Church, like a Church of Germany, like the Anglican Church of England.
Like a Church of England, yeah.
But there was too many squabbles in between them. But that shows you that Christianity was obviously close to his heart if he put so much effort into trying to solve the problems that the different Christian sects had. Well, as well as this, the newspapers were aiding the Centre Party and the Social Democrats as well, weren't they? The newspapers were attacking.
Well, that's a natural assumption, because at that time, obviously, you know, the Jews have done what Jews do. They've, you know, seized the media. You know, they've got what they always get, you know, to take over a country. And so, yeah, until it like actually gets into power and kicks them all out, then certainly that media is going to side with anybody but Adolf Hitler.
Well, didn't they buy their own newspaper or something? The Beer
Bakter? Yeah, I think they did, yeah, from what I recall. And this is probably what Untermeyer's whinging about as well, because they did get organised and they buy their own printing facilities and printed the flyers and, you know, they sent them over to places all over Europe and, you know, using bankers' money, which was great.
So they responded to it in the same way, basically. If the media is slandering them, what they did was come out with their own media and put out what the truth was, what the facts was. It was the same as today, isn't it, with the fake news media on the TV and the truth movement media on the internet. So what else was Hitler's response to this? How did he manage to gain so many people for the movement against such huge odds, do you think?
Well, I think with all it publicly spoken out against the Dawes and the Young Plan, it made certain other predictions, and I think the Germans trusted him. I mean, they were looking for a Messiah, as it was, and the more he spoke, the more he convinced people, you know, the more he got slandered, the more lies thrown at him, they didn't stick. And sometimes, you know, the people, they do realise how powerful the truth is, and at the end of it all, what he's saying to them, he says, look, you know, you give the Weimar government 14 years and they couldn't do it. I'm just asking you to give me 4 years. Give me 4 years. I'll walk away myself if I can't do it, you know, but I want to put myself in that position because of the country. He changed his nationality from Austrian to German so he could run for the election. And they believed him. They obviously believed him.
And he must have been explaining all this time, look, the reason why you're in this state is because of this Dawes plan, because of this Young plan, because of the Versailles Treaty.
Versailles Treaty.
This is what's caused all of this. This is my plan for putting a stop to it. This is the 25-point plan. If you vote for me, we will implement this. Is the 25-point plan in Mein Kampf? Did he come up with that while he was in prison, do you know, or did that, was it afterwards?
No, I don't think so. It came up after, I think. But the thing was, right, he was always being asked, right, I found it amazing. The SDP and others were always asking, well, what are you going to do then? What are you going to do? What's going to change things? And he never answered them. And the reason he never answered them is because he knew if he'd answered them with what he was going to do, they would think of a way to, you know, convince people it was wrong or whatever. So he just stayed quiet and never told them. And it worked. They couldn't criticise him because he never said what he was going to do, but the people just had to trust him.
Well, they must have really had some faith in him then. If he hadn't actually said what he was going to do and he said, you just give me 4 years and I'll fix it. You know,
there was an area of Germany which was under National Socialism, like the councils, what we have.
Yeah.
There's an area which had National Socialism before, and the system worked. It was the first time there was no debt, and the first time, you know, everything was paid off and all the books were straight in history. So Hitler had a good idea what was going to be implemented nationwide was already working.
Which part of Germany was that?
I haven't got it in front of me, but I think it's... Might have been around the Munich area, might have been around Bavaria, but I haven't gone in front of me. But I did think that was something to note, because when it's working like that, it's already, and you can see, you know, what he's saying is right, then that's a powerful thing.
So he just had to upscale what he'd already done to sort of national size, because they got areas like Saxony, Thuringia.
That's right. It was one of them areas like that. I'll find out for next week.
Okay, well, because of all of this, because of all the hard work that he put in and all the members that they'd got together, all the speeches that he had done, because of all this, by the time of the 1933 election, the NSDAP had almost 1 million members, with millions more Germans prepared to vote for Hitler. He had built the largest political movement ever in German history, and all in just 13 years. So how many people were there roughly in Germany at the time if he had 1 million members, do you know?
I think 80 million normally for Germany. That's for everybody. But I can also remember him saying as well that the National Socialist leaders will die for the cause, all of them. Will die to make sure that Germany survives. That's a powerful statement. Because when you think, if the Tory party came out and said, you know, these MPs are going to die to make this country right, you'd laugh, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they have no ideology worth dying for. That's the big difference, isn't it? I mean, correct. If you look years ago, kings were prepared to die for their country.
It's the same principle. And the nation had been that battered with Versailles and World War One, and then they'd gone off through all this. When there was times where there were photographs of people cutting up horses in the street so they could eat. And suddenly, yeah, let's go with this. We've got to try it.
You have to have gone through hard times to make the right decisions when you're in good times.
Correct.
And obviously Germany had been through some very, very, very hard times. Hitler had been through hard times himself. He'd been homeless. He'd been in prison.
Starvation. What's ever had starvation?
Yeah, he knew what life was like right at the bottom end of the scale, and he never forgot that. He never thought, well, now I've got money, I'm so much better than everybody else. He did all that he could to help the people that were at the bottom there. That's what nationalism is. It's not about class war. It's about class cooperation. The stunning result from the 1933 election. What was the stunning result at that election, Dennis?
Well, what was stunning about it was this party is only 13 years old, and it's also had its leader locked up, and various things, banned for speaking for 2 years. They finished up with something, I've got it down somewhere, out of just over 600 seats, they finished with 230. So they were the biggest party in Parliament, but not enough overall, because all the others would gang against them.
Yeah, this is the point, this is what I'm saying, where you've got so many different parties, even though they're the biggest party, they're still below half, aren't they? 230, and then you've got,
out of 608.
Yes, yeah, so you've got another 370 that are made up from all these other parties. So how was he able to get the things done that he needed to get done when he didn't have that majority? What was the process that they went through?
Well, the Reichstag fire helped. I mean, I still say it were communists who at that time had realised that, you know, Hitler had got to the mountaintop and actually got into power. So now you've got a lot of communists who were miffed. And when that went down, they went for the Enabling Act, and that's when the Vatican stepped in and sent instructions to the Centre Party to tell, you know, the Catholic population to back Adolf Hitler so he can be dictator of Germany. And then, without a second thought, shut it down because it were infiltrated.
So the Reichstag fire was actually quite helpful. And I guess because of up to this point, they're still not able to get anything done. You've got all these parties that are fighting and squabbling, and the party with the majority, the National Socialists, they're still not able to get anything passed because the other parties are ganging up on them.
Yep.
And then the Reichstag burns down, and that's like a final straw. So who was it that was able to actually give Hitler the power with the Enabling Act? Because nobody's got the power. So it was the courts that did that.
Well, I would think so, because again, law, you know, it's the only way you can get things through when, you know, there's a stalemate. And they did bring laws in. I mean, in the documentary, this guy goes on about, you know, they've lost all the things what's good about democracy. But I mean, you and I both know democracy is what it is. You know, they said there were no free speech and all this kind of carry on. No free speech when Hitler were banned for 2 years. But it gave him direct power to try and fix, you know, the country. And I suppose there's that story about some politicians thinking that they could control him, but who's going to control him? And that's an animal if there ever were one.
So the Enabling Act was basically giving the party with the majority the power to make the laws regardless of what these other parties had to say. What happened to
those
other
parties?
Well, it
made the country safer as well, because you didn't want fires, did you? You didn't want communists going around, you know, causing what they do.
What happened to those other parties then, and the people that were in those seats?
He shut them down.
So he just said, right, you're
always going to shut
them
down, weren't
he? You're out.
You know, he were sick at SDP, weren't he, let's be honest.
So the SDP had a break for 10 years or whatever it was.
Whatever, yeah.
Until they came back. And you say that the Vatican, who had helped with his rise, would waste little time signing the Reich Concordat and ruthlessly closing down their own progressive infiltrated centre party. And that's a really important point, that
it wakes up again, doesn't it?
It was the Catholics themselves, the Catholic Church, the Vatican, that shut down the centre party. So it wasn't the National Socialists that said, right, we're shutting you lot down. The Vatican said, right, stand down. There's no need for the centre party.
In Wikipedia, it says that Hitler promised that if you do vote for me, then don't worry, I'll make sure that everything's all right. That's what it says in Wikipedia, but we all know it were the church what shut it down, because it was left wing.
So you've got the biggest parties, you've got the Centre Party, and you've got this SDP. Was the Centre Party the larger
There's
one?
There's another one, no, I think, but I can't remember its name now. I think the SDP were the larger one, but there's still a lot in the Centre Party, because it was all the Catholics, weren't it? Or a majority of them.
And it had to have been the Pope that shut it down, because he signed this concordat.
Yeah, well, they can't argue, can they? I mean, once for one, it were probably financing the Centre Party to a large extent, because it's their party.
So they cut the financing off, and that's it. Yeah, the party has to
And when
stop.
The Pope says to the the Catholics in Germany, you know, I'm telling your leaders to tell you to vote for Adolf Hitler, the leader of that centre party can't really argue with Pope.
Well, that's another point then as well, isn't it? I mean, when he told them to vote for them, did that mean in the next election they were supposed to vote for him, or did that mean when Hitler was trying
for for the power, for this Enabling Act.
To vote for the Enabling Act.
Dictatorial power.
Right.
Then he would shut the rest down.
Okay, because I was just thinking, because like, if he had the centre party with him, maybe he would have had a majority. You know, in the parliament, he would then have had a majority. The Pope had said to the centre party, right, well, you've got to go and vote with the NSDAP on, you know, on whatever they're doing in parliament. He would have had a majority, but he didn't do that because obviously they wanted him to have this Enabling Act. They wanted him to have the full power, clearly.
Imagine the bishops and the priests who went to war with National Socialists and Hitler, how they felt when their Pope turned around and said, vote for him. There must be some bad feeling there.
Oh, what the ones that have been refusing to bury the National Socialists and give them sacraments. The Pope said, right, now you go and support him.
Yeah. They can't argue with him because he's the Pope.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? That's why we say there were these two factions in the church. There was the progressive faction and the traditionalist faction. And the traditionalist faction were obviously on the side of the National Socialists, and the progressive faction were, bizarrely enough, on the side of the communists.
Incredible, yeah. But there were probably, you know, I mean, at that time in America in the 30s, there were 1,000 bishops and priests had infiltrated, got to the highest levels of the church in America. So you can imagine, you know, in Germany, it wouldn't have been, you know, too different.
There was infiltration everywhere, and, you know, Hitler helped with the purging of that.
Didn't he? Freemasonry.
These people that were supportive of Freemasonry and communism that were in office anywhere were told, well, you're an enemy of the state, basically. You have to renounce what you're doing. And if they were particularly bad, then they would be sent to these camps. So
he said, like, that's not your job. You know, political speaking is not your job. Stick to your job, preach, you'll be fine.
So when we hear of old Hitler was persecuting the church, not the whole church. He was clearing out the communists from the church with the Pope's blessing.
Yeah, and all his allies, because all his allies were of the same thought. They didn't want communism neither. Mussolini,
and Franco. Croatian. Yeah, and all these other Catholic countries that were doing the same, that were trying to get the right wing of the church back into a position of power.
And they banned all Freemasonry. Spain, Italy, everywhere.
It's totally different to
what we've been told.
Yeah, what the mainstream story is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is great stuff, Dennis. When do you think episode 20 is going to be available then?
I think it's going to be ready next week, to be honest. I mean, I can't see it not being. And I'm still debating whether that's the final part or not. I'll have to wait and see. You know, I'll see how I manage to end this one. Because, you know, I've hit that period where I've been banging away at walls. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, it's all coming in. So.
And you've got some more episodes up there on BitChute now, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I managed to get all the ones up, apart from the bonus. I'm going to leave the bonus till the final episode up. And I started putting The Great Story Never Told up as well.
So you're all
quite
the way
liberating.
Up. So you're all the way up to episode 19 on BitChute then, so people can catch
on,
up.
On Secret Masonic, yeah. And that's Truthful Out. And I do actually be able to get some of these podcasts up.
Excellent stuff, Dennis. Well, thank you very much for coming on today.
Loved it, yeah.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you all have a great weekend ahead of you.